This is Kids These Days.
Today on our program, we're learning about drugs these days. Did you know today's marijuana is not the same stuff that was smoked in the 1960s? And there are new over-the-counter drugs available these days posing as everyday things like bath salts. Well, this hour, we're learning about what drugs look like today, what to look for as a watchful caregiver, and we're also talking about prevention efforts across Alaska. That, as well as the voices of teens collected by our friends at the Alaska Teen Media Institute, and the upside of risk behaviors, or the lack thereof, among our young people. Turns out there are a lot of young Alaskans who choose not to use drugs. All that and more this hour. That's today on Kids These Days. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy, your KTD host. On this program, we talk about families and young people and how our relationships affect the lives of everyone in our Alaska community. As kids get older, they gain more and more independence, and that's a great thing, right? We want our kids to learn how to be responsible individuals who can make good decisions. So as caretakers, it's important to know about the world our young people are actually living in and what's available to them in it. As I've already mentioned, we are talking about drugs these days today. Before I introduce our in-studio guests, I want to invite you to take part in our conversation. Do it online. Comment easily at kidsthesedays.org by using Facebook Connect, or send us an email to mail@kidsthesedays.org. We'll make sure what you say is part of the ongoing conversation that happens week, month, and year-long online. Today, I'm joined by Tech Sergeant Jennifer Thulin with the Alaska National Guard. Jennifer works with the Drug Demand Reduction Program, or the DDR. The Alaska National Guard Drug Demand Reduction Program actively supports prevention efforts through education and alternative activities to local, state, and federal educational and community-based organizations. It's a pleasure to have you here today, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
And Tad Sumner has worked with adolescents who have addictions for over 10 years. He's the clinical director of the Volunteers of America ARCH Residential Program for Addicted Teens. He's also a therapist at Counseling Solutions of Alaska, where he provides therapy for adults and adolescents. Thanks to you for being here, Tad.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Alaska State Trooper Rick Polak. Rick has been with the Troopers for more than 12 years, and he's worked all over Alaska. He's now based in Anchorage, is a narcotics investigator, and is a member of the Drug Enforcement Agency Task Force. He's also a canine handler and trainer. Thanks for being here, Rick.
My pleasure.
Well, I think, Rick, we should start with you. You are a state trooper, and I figure you know a lot about what's out there in terms of the drugs these days that are available to anyone in Alaska and also the youth here.
Actually, it's quite extensive. Probably one of the easiest ways for kids especially to get drugs are the drugs that are right within the household. Drugs that people consider as being legal, they're prescribed to either the parents, another member of the family, and when they're not utilized completely, it's easy for the kids to get those. Some of the common ones that we see are Oxycontins, oxycodones, hydrocodones, those types of things, but it could be almost anything that somebody will get their hands on. Other than that, I mean, there's the marijuana out there, as you stated. There's methamphetamine, whether it's produced here in Alaska. We don't see quite as much as we used to doing that, but it's imported. There's cocaine, there's heroin, there's ecstasy. There's different things that aren't quite really considered drugs in some respects that are sold as other items, but they're only sold as that really as a guise. Their main purpose is to be used as a drug. Things like spice, if people have heard of that. There's different types of bath salts that really aren't, but that's what they're kind of advertised to be, to kind of skirt the laws. So those things are out there, and they're actually quite dangerous. People think of, well, they're legal, they're sold in the store. Spice is sold at times being advertised as a legal synthetic marijuana, and it really has nothing to do with marijuana. So there's actually quite a bit of drugs out there that's available to anybody up here in Alaska.
We talk a lot about caregivers and talk to caregivers a lot on this program. What might you know through your job as one of the most surprising things that your average caregiver in Anchorage and in Alaska might say, oh my gosh, if you told them?
Well, I don't know the actual numbers of how many people here are using drugs. But what I am surprised at really is being as confined as we are, being as such a small population base really is what Alaska is, still the quantities of drugs that we actually end up intercepting. I mean, that's my primary job within the drug unit, is to intercept drugs coming in. So I don't really deal with the end user quite so much. It's really the provider, and it's amazing to me. I've worked patrol, working a canine for a number of years, and still was surprised when I actually got on the interdiction side to see the quantity that is coming into here.
And when you say surprised, give me some measurement for that. I know nothing about how much is a lot. I know nothing about any of this. So what do you mean when you say how much is coming in and that's really a surprising fact?
Well, and what made it a surprise for me is, like I said, even working a dog, that if I found an ounce of cocaine on the street, that was a significant find for me as a patrol trooper. Once I got into interdiction, we're finding multi-kilos. So a kilo is 2.2 pounds. So multi-kilos coming in a shipment. We'll seize, and it varies obviously from year to year, but we'll seize upwards of, within the state, about 40 to 50 kilos at times of cocaine. To me, that's pretty significant when you're talking over 100 pounds when there's roughly 600,000 people here. And obviously, we're not getting close to all of it. So to me, the quantities are quite extensive.
Jennifer Thulin with the Alaska National Guard. You are a part of a prevention program with the Alaska National Guard. And I'm wondering, why is it, first off, that the Alaska National Guard is interested in providing prevention of substance abuse to the people that you serve?
Well, we're part of a larger program called the Counter Drug Support Program. So we've got different departments in that. And so we're kind of, DDR's, we like to call it the face of counter drug. So there's the preventative side of the house, which is us, and then there's kind of like what Rick was saying, the interdiction part of it, and that's the other departments of counter drug. So our interest is to cover all bases, not only stopping the drugs from coming in or doing the grows and that kind of thing, but also the preventative side of the house too. So providing education. So it's a full circle.
I see. So how do you do the preventative side, the education? What are you physically doing out there to make a difference?
A lot. So I like to say that we have a different program for every season. So for instance, in the spring and in the summertime, we have an E3 camp out at Fort Richardson. And what that does is it provides a alternative for students to participate in instead of doing, you know, drugs or that kind of thing. And it's free to the public. And basically we do team building and social competence and that kind of thing. And we don't really talk about drugs specifically during the E3 camp, but what we do is we link up with teachers and then we'll see them during the school season. And that's when we bring our message to the schools, is during the fall. So we provide inside dope presentations, and that's where a health teacher will request a certain drug and we'll come out and do an hour presentation and incorporate a lot of team building and kind of finding creative ways of getting our message across in the schools. And then we also do the Kid Lift program, and that's where we land Black Hawk helicopters in a playground outside of an elementary school, and then we bring the kids out in groups and we show them, if you live a healthy lifestyle, if you stay away from drugs, you can potentially be a pilot. Like, you're not letting things stand in your way of your dreams like drugs would.
So I'm just wondering, why is it that the Alaska National Guard is interested in helping kids who aren't necessarily service members stay away from risky behaviors like substance abuse? Like, what is it that gives you the impetus to do this work in the first place?
Well, being a guardsman, we're volunteers to the state and the country. So in helping the state with natural disasters and that kind of thing, we're community servants as well. So it's tied into what our mission is, not only to serve the country in a time of war or in the state in a time of natural disaster, but also providing help to the community, you know, preventative help and that kind of thing, education.
Mm-hmm. So. Do the state troopers also have prevention efforts underway as well in the state?
Well, they do. We actually participate in the DARE program. And being a canine handler especially, I've gone out to different schools. In fact, recently did one at the King's Career Center where I'll bring the dog in, give a presentation of the same type of thing, of what drugs are out there, what the drugs can do, you know, to them as, you know, the kids in the school, the adverse effects that it'll have on them, whether physically or if they get caught, you know, what it will take away. And being a canine handler, the dog tends to help with that. You bring the dog in, if it's something where somebody feels that they really don't feel comfortable approaching a police officer, the dog seems to break down those barriers. I've had people, even when I was in a marked unit, people come up to me and ask if they could show their kids the dog and those kind of things. So it kind of helps break down those barriers. We show the kids too also, you know, that this is one of the tools we have. So you may think you're getting away with it, but we'll put on a small demonstration with how the dog can sniff out the drugs and kind of let them know that there's a lot of things out there that might get them caught if they think they might be able to get away with it. But our main goal is to prevent it. There's been studies showing that the majority of crimes that are done do involve whether it's alcohol or drugs. And if you could prevent that, well, then it makes our life, you know, easier, safer. So, you know, voluntary compliance is what we're really seeking.
Dad Sumner, you're here with Volunteers of America. You are a therapist, so you work with adolescents who are struggling with substance abuse issues and addiction. We're in a discussion here about what's out there and also about some of the efforts toward prevention locally. What do you see from your perspective that works when it comes to efforts for prevention, to prevent kids from using substances?
That's a great question, and I think it's where all of us are targeting, right? Ideally to intervene before, you know, anyone, right, even teens or even adults use, or more importantly, obviously, before it comes a problem. Well, at Volunteers America, we have the whole continuum of care. So we do Prime for Life, which is if a kid gets in trouble at school, they have to go through Prime for Life before they can go back to school, you know, things like that, all the way to outpatient, intensive outpatient, and then residential, where I'm the director of. And we also have some programs where we're actually trying to change the whole culture of the perspective on substance use. So we have some commercials people may have seen. And so I guess, again, coming back to your question, it's just such a hard question to answer. You know, I remember somebody came up and did a training for us from LA, and they said, "Hey, why do kids use here? What do they say?" "Oh, there's nothing to do." And the guy in LA said, "Oh, our kids say the same thing. There's nothing to do there." You know, and you picture a place like Los Angeles, so we can do anything. So I guess to answer your question, really as stereotypical as it sounds, is something they're interested in, something they're engaged in, feeling supported. Because, you know, whether, like you said, the 60s or now in, you know, 2011, there's always been substances or things to use. It just looks, and, you know, we see kids that are cheerleaders all the way to kids that, you know, live in poverty. So, I mean, we see the whole gamut of types of socioeconomics and people from Barrow to Kenai to Anchorage, and it's all really because kids, well, people, I know as cheesy as it sounds, they like drugs. Like they feel better, and they haven't found often things that make them feel as good. I'm not going to probably get into what we do in treatment yet, but really a lot of what they're talking about, which is, you know, when you're talking about Jen about finding things that they're engaged in, you know, having positive goals, things that seem fun and exciting opposed to using, you know, it's all those things I think most people know on a gut level, but sometimes, you know, drugs feel really good, you know, and sometimes it's hard to compete with that depending on the type of kid's personality or person's personality.
But maybe so, having some meaningful engagements in advance of that time
absolutely.
Be very significant.
Yeah, and those are the kids we see do best, is that they have had, you know, previous goals. They've been really good at swimming or track or into music or have wanted to be in, you know, the army or things like that. They like, "Oh, I got off track. I want to go back to those things. I did enjoy them," you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think this is a great time to hear some teen voices. The Alaska Teen Media Institute and their reporter Aviva Hirsch discovered recently what teens will tell other teens about their own drug use and experimentation. Here's something she compiled with some of their answers that gives us a glimpse of what kids she knows are actually doing.
High school is a time when people push the limits, experiment, and build a foundation for the rest of their lives. I spoke with a few kids from West Anchorage High School about their thoughts on drugs.
I think that you should stay away from them because they lead to trouble.
I think at least at West, it's like, it's okay to use them, but just don't get into the hard stuff. And like, as long as you've got kind of a backup plan to get out of them, by all means, you can try it.
So if someone says they've done drugs, it's like, if they say we're going to talk about not doing drugs, it's kind of like, I don't want to do that. I just know not to do drugs.
I think they're pretty much think they're kind of stupid. I don't really see why so many people are interested in them.
It's not very, like, attractive, people that do drugs, like hardcore drugs, and, like, think that it's cool. But I don't know. I don't really see it as that big of a deal. People that do some drugs occasionally, I don't see it as that big of a deal.
How common do you think it is in high school?
Oh, pretty common.
I could generalize and say most people, high schoolers included, have a subconscious memo inscribed into their brain. Drugs equals bad. But how bad are they?
Everyone knows about all the kids who do Adderall all the time in college because they need to focus for that amount of time to do papers and stuff. And so that might be worthwhile. I don't know. But, I mean, doing crack doesn't seem to have a specific purpose. And it can, you know, make you a crack whore or something.
I think that all debauchery in general, partying, drugs, and alcohol, always make you rise up, like, socially.
There are times in your life, like in college or, like, maybe high school, where you can do it, but you need to know when to not do it so that it doesn't affect, like, your studies or anything like that.
Have you ever been interested in doing drugs?
Yes. It's a recreational thing. It's a social thing. It's obviously very fun. And I think that as long as I'm not doing it when I should be doing something else, then it's fine.
Do you think that your parents have done drugs before?
They've told me that they have. Because they used to be like biker people, apparently.
What was your reaction?
Not surprised at all.
My mom, probably not. She was like the biggest nerd in high school. She still is. She doesn't really understand it at all, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them had. Like, at least tried.
I know my stepdad smokes marijuana because I actually found his stash of marijuana when my mom was making me clean. And that was weird, but it's fine. I don't really care.
Because, you know, they do tell me not to do drugs, and I understand that I shouldn't do drugs. And it would just, you know, like, be calling the kettle black.
Well, my mom's like, "Gosh, don't do drugs." And I'm like, "Okay, Mom." Because we both know that I already have.
Do you think a lot of adults that you know have done drugs?
I think every single one of them has at some point in their life.
My impression from the interviews was this. Most everyone chases the thrill. And in this case, there are a lot of minor criminals out there.
I've seen what it's done to people, and I just think it's not good. Nothing good comes from it.
It's all about, like, oh, don't do drugs until you're, like, 18 or anything, because that's when you actually have volition over your actions and stuff like that.
After your brain's fully developed, sure, why not? No one's stopping you. Except the law.
Stay in drugs, don't do school, always, always listen to your grandparents.
He wanted me to tell you that that was a joke.
I mean, obviously everything in moderation, because that's just how everything works, but most drugs will seriously mess you up and are seriously addictive. Like meth, don't do meth.
For the Alaska Teen Media Institute, this is Aviva Hirsch.
Aviva's work is regularly featured on our program. She has helped producing her pieces from the staff at the Alaska Teen Media Institute. You're here with us on Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today I'm joined in the studio by Rick Pollack, Tad Sumner, and Jennifer Thulin. We're talking about drugs these days in Alaska. What's here? How do we keep our young people from using? And what do we do when we need help? And Rick Pollack, let me ask you first, do you have any reaction to some of those pretty candid answers that came from Aviva's piece?
Well, I can't say they're surprising because I deal with people a lot. But when you start hearing, in this case, youth, young adults saying, well, it's okay to do if you either stay away from the hard stuff or it's okay to do if you do it in moderation. I don't know a single person that is at the addict level that said, you know, I think I want to be an addict when I grow up. They start with something simple, alcohol. By drinking alcohol, we all know it makes you necessarily make decisions that maybe you wouldn't. And if that decision is while you're under that influence of taking another one, taking smoking marijuana, taking another type of drug, then you've now entered that because of this minor level drug, if you want to call alcohol that. So most people don't go into it saying, you know, yeah, I want to be an addict when I grow up. They end up going into it saying, oh, I can control it. And, you know, one of the individuals on there mentioned, well, don't do meth. Well, that's good advice, because there's a lot of people that they'll do meth. Either they'll do it the first time and not really get much out of it, do it the second time, and by that time, they're basically hooked. They want to just keep, they're always chasing that high. It will never be that good again. And they always keep chasing it. And that's the problem. Once you, that small amount doesn't work enough for you anymore, so you try more. And pretty soon you're doing it all of the time. And it works that way with prescription medications. You know, most people view heroin as that, you know, 60s, 70s junkie, the guy strung out on the side of the road, needle stuck in his arm. So it's kind of something that, you know, you heard on there, kids saying, well, stay away from the hard stuff. But when somebody comes up to you and says, well, here's this pill, it's not that bad, a doctor prescribes it, it's really, you know, it's okay. And they pop that pill, and maybe they get a little bit of a good feeling from it. But in a short period of time, then somebody says, well, you know what? If you really want to feel better, you can crush it up and smoke it. And then from there, it gets to, well, if that's not good enough for you, here, let's dilute it down and inject it. And then pretty soon, when that pill is costing more than what they can afford, and somebody comes up and says, well, you know, I can get you heroin a whole lot cheaper. You're already shooting this stuff up in your arm. What's the difference? And at that point, yeah, that initial thought of, yeah, I'm not going to stick a needle in my arm is gone. And they're quickly into something like heroin. And I haven't found a single heroin user that it hasn't destroyed their life.
Mm-hmm. The idea that marijuana is not as bad as other harder drugs has been circulating for years, and with modern marijuana more potent than the pot smoked in previous generations, this idea is even more harmful today. But this message isn't getting out. As marijuana becomes legalized in certain areas, dispensed to treat a host of medical issues, and permeates modern movies, music, and online, kids are increasingly conditioned to believe that using pot is normal. With recent studies showing a link between the early use of marijuana and increased chances of developing psychosis, these social norms surrounding pot use are especially dangerous for children and teens. Here in Alaska, campaigns addressing alcohol and tobacco use are actively engaging youth, but there has not yet been a similar kind of anti-marijuana campaign until now. The Anchorage Youth Development Coalition, a group of more than 60 local youth-serving organizations, is in the planning stages of a new campaign that will address these social norms around using pot. Youth Development Specialist Thomas Azzarella recently spoke with KTD producer Sarah Gonzalez.
Hi, Thomas. Thanks for talking to us today.
Hi, Sarah.
So I understand that the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition, which you are a part of, has identified a need to start a social norms campaign. Tell us more about that.
Well, this campaign is kind of in its infancy right now. What we realized was looking through our kind of data and information here in Anchorage, we kind of identified what are the two drugs that are being most readily, accessible and used by young people in our community. The first being alcohol, the second being marijuana, and then kind of that third being is tobacco. So our coalition has decided to focus its kind of attention and efforts on what we can do to reduce the number of young people who are engaging in those risk behaviors of drinking alcohol or smoking marijuana or using marijuana in any other form.
So there are campaigns that exist currently that address drinking alcohol and also using mm-hmm. tobacco, but there's nothing like that for marijuana?
Currently, there isn't a really broad community support in terms of addressing or at least starting the conversation around youth marijuana use or even marijuana use in general in our community. There are some groups that do efforts surrounding that. So Volunteers of America does speak about it. Some other organizations have programs that talk or address about marijuana, but normally it's in context with another drug or other substance use prevention matters. So we're really kind of looking at seeing what we can do in our community to start the conversation specifically about marijuana.
So why does that conversation need to happen? Why does it need to get going? Are the numbers showing that lots of kids are using marijuana, or is it more like their attitude about marijuana being not that big of a deal?
Well, what we're really excited to report is, according to our youth risk behavioral survey that's administered every 2 years inside of our school district, is that our youth here in Anchorage are predominantly making good choices. At our traditional high schools, so high schools like East, West, Diamond, Eagle River High, our traditional high school students are typically saying that about 81% of them are choosing not to use marijuana on a regular basis, so within the last 30 days. So we're excited to see that, you know, we're getting this data coming back to us on a consistent basis saying that the majority of our young people aren't engaging in using marijuana. However, the kind of part that we're a little nervous about is the fact that in the last 2 years, we did see a slight decrease in the number of youth who were saying that they weren't using marijuana. Between our 2007 and 2009 surveys, we saw just about a 1% decrease in the number of young people who were saying they weren't using marijuana. So we just really want to stay ahead of the curve, be proactive on this. We know nationally marijuana rates are increasing in terms of its acceptance in the community as a legal drug in some of our communities down in the lower 48. So we just really want to try and be proactive and address the issue before it becomes a bigger issue here in Alaska.
Why, in your research or even anecdotally, because I know that you work with teenagers often, what is the attitude that they have that surrounds marijuana that makes it maybe in their opinion, you know, not that big of a deal if they did try it?
In general, just through talking to lots of teen groups, I run a teen advisory council for Anchorage United for Youth at East High School. And speaking to them about marijuana is there's a general sense of marijuana as not being as harmful. Young people definitely realize, and I think in general our community recognizes, the harm of something such as methamphetamine use, so meth or heroin, or even underage drinking. There's some real perceived harms associated with it. But just due to the nature and the history behind marijuana use, both in our state and kind of nationally and internationally, marijuana is oftentimes considered as a less hazardous option in terms of drugs. So there's definitely a perception that there's this kind of safe use amount. What we're really hoping to do is to start the conversation at home. What we're routinely hearing from teens in terms of their decision to either engage in a risk behavior or to engage in substance use is really based on the conversation that's happening at home. If there is a conversation that's been initiated by parents more than once at home about, you know, marijuana usage or alcohol usage or any other risk behavior, whether it is risky sexual behavior, all the way down to using your bike helmets. If parents and families are talking about those behaviors at home, at the dinner table, or in between conversations, the young people are more likely to respond to those conversations and think twice before they engage in the behavior.
What do you think keeps parents from already doing that at home?
I think there is definitely, you know, in terms of what might be a preventative factor for some parents from having that conversation is they may have past used marijuana and the perception of, oh, it was okay for me to use, or I used it when I was younger. And, you know, some of those kind of thoughts that maybe go around that. One of the challenges with talking to young people about drug use or alcohol use at home is a lot of parents oftentimes are afraid to initiate the conversation because they're afraid of seeding the thought into that young person. That by talking about the preventive, having that preventive conversation, they may be encouraging their young person or exposing their young person to it. In my personal opinion, you know, it's better to have that preventative talk than to try and wait until it's a reactive talk and the young person is already engaged in the behavior. Because at that point, it's going to sound like a personal attack to that teenager or young person who's already engaged in a behavior that you're not hoping they'll be engaged in.
Marijuana is different now, isn't it?
To some degree, marijuana has definitely changed. There is a lot more in terms of its growth and development, the actual manufacturing of marijuana, what may be inside of the drug, too, in terms of if it's been laced or, enhanced in any other way with some other chemical or drug. And I think really in general, it's less even about that the drug itself has changed, but the context in which young people are making decision has changed. There's definitely more of a media presence now. with marijuana out there in terms of states that are legalizing marijuana use. So our young people up here are seeing that and hearing about it on the news. There is more of a social presence online about marijuana use. So our young people, the context in which they're making the decision has changed. Whereas, you know, even thinking back to my teenage years, you know, there was definitely talk and there was stuff out there about marijuana. There's a lot more now in terms of what's out there. You know, you can go to most any of our malls in town and find merchandise that has a pot leaf on it or that talks about, you know, smoking in some type of way.
That was Youth Development Specialist Thomas Azzarella from the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition and our producer, Sarah Gonzalez. You can find out more about the organizations that are part of AYDC by visiting our website at kidsthesedays.org. This is Kids These Days, and today we're learning all about drugs these days on the program. I'm joined in the studio by Trooper Rick Pollack, Tad Sumner with Volunteers of America, and Tech Sergeant Jennifer Thulin with the Alaska National Guard. We'll continue our conversation and get a chance to respond to that piece we just heard about marijuana social norms, and we'll do that together after the break. Also still coming up this hour, Jessica Cochran has some good news about the strength of our youth. We're wrapping up this half of the show with a special song for you. Vera Marquardt is a 17-year-old Hawaiian who wrote this original song while in a substance abuse recovery program in L.A. Her song about recovery, called Take It to the Day, won third place last year in the Music Cares and Grammy Foundation's National Teen Substance Abuse Awareness Through Music Foundation Contest. Stay with us.
It's so easy to slip back into my old way of life. And from now on I will be strong and learn from my wrongs. Take it to the days when I didn't have to depend. The easy way out has slowed me down, but I lift off the ground. I never thought that I had the strength to stop my crazy ways. The negative must reach its length. Why not in my younger days? I will resist it and persist with bringing on the change. I guess it's true, you really have to learn from your mistakes. Take it to the days when I didn't have to depend. The easy way out has slowed me down, but I lift off the ground. Take it to the days when I didn't have to depend. The easy way slowed me down, but I lift off the ground.
Kids These Days.
Next time on Kids These Days, we're putting two competing parenting ideas up against each other to see what happens. Join me, Shanna Sheehy, when we match up free-range parenting and over-parenting. Which side are you on? Everybody has opinions about how to grow kids up right, right? Well, what do you think? Should your kindergartner walk home from school all by herself? Or should you be calling her college professor to ask about that ill-deserved C on her transcript? Or are you somewhere in the middle? Also on this show, we find out what parents in rural Alaska think about free ranging. We ask grown-ups about their experiences when they were young, and there's a brand new Power of One for you too. Join us for all that and more next time on the program. Kids These Days airs Tuesday at 2 and again at 7 p.m. right here on listener-supported KSKA. You are listening to Kids These Days here with me, Shanna Sheehy. Today I'm speaking with Alaska National Guard Tech Sergeant Jennifer Thulin, Tad Sumner with Volunteers of America, and Alaska State Trooper Rick Pollack. We're discussing drugs these days today on the show, and we're learning about many prevention efforts underway in Alaska. Please let us know what you're thinking about today's subject. Write to us at mail@kidsthesedays.org or chime in on our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. And Jennifer Thune, let me ask you, with your work with the Drug Demand Reduction Program through the Alaska National Guard, we just heard a piece before the break that was talking about addressing the social norms around the use of marijuana. Do you and your programs address that particular topic in any way?
We do. One of the presentations that we have or that we provide is mostly geared towards high school students. And I like to think of a presentation I did at East High School last winter on marijuana. And we like to say in our office that it's the most challenging topic to discuss because the kids have really sharp questions about that. And with it being in the medical field now and Marinol and with, you know, medical personnel finding or research finding helpful things in, you know, THC for people with cancer and that kind of thing, it's hotly debated. Mm-hmm. So what I like to focus on is, instead of talking about that, we like to focus on lifestyle. So I'll put it on the students. So what kind of a lifestyle do you think regular pot smokers live? You know, and then they'll say, oh, well, I have a friend who, you know, has a great job and he smokes pot all the time. But how many of those friends do you have that are successful that smoke pot regularly? And I just like to put it on them and just kind of connect. And then I'll say, how do they know what they're smoking? You know, another thing I want to mention is we like to make field trips, our office does, to different drug rehabs in Anchorage. And one in particular that we go to is the Center for Drug Problems. And there, one question that we asked the counselors was, what drug do most heroin addicts say that they started off with? And they said, marijuana. They didn't even think about it, marijuana. Really? So I have to tell the kids that. Yeah, it sounds softer than something that's perceived as a hardcore drug like heroin, but where do heroin addicts start? Pills, marijuana, and then they eventually grow tolerance and they graduate. So I really like to put everything on the kids and then ask them questions. So what is your perception of marijuana? You know, mm-hmm. Do you know what it does to your brain? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, so. One interesting bit of research that I discovered when preparing for this program is that there is an incidence of young people experiencing psychosis or episodes of psychosis that's relatable to pot use and the amount of their pot use. And that was just a kind of shocking fact that I found. And I wonder, maybe both Rick Polak and also Tad Sumner, from your experience, Rick, in law enforcement, and yours, Tad, in being a therapist, is this something that's happening to young people? Like, if they get really into smoking marijuana, are they, you know, hallucinating? Are they seeing things that aren't there? Are they really dealing with some serious mental health issues as a result of that?
Actually, I'm not the best one to answer that. I'm mainly involved with the upper level dealer, if you will. Mm-hmm. So intercepting the drugs coming in. But what Jen said when she addresses the kids saying, how do you know what you're smoking? Mm-hmm. That 100% is accurate. There's been several different occasions where we've intercepted boxes that contained marijuana, and it just didn't quite look right, look like what you would normally expect. Sent it off to the lab and found out that it's laced with amphetamines.
Really? Now,
and that's happened several different times. Now, I would suspect that the person that front-end purchased that probably knows what they're getting. The kid that's now going to smoke it, probably not. I mean, it's going to be handed to him. It's going to already be in a pipe. It's going to be, and it was difficult for me to see in a well-lit room, and I was looking at it. Somebody handing you that in a pipe, you're not going to know it. You're not going to know what you're smoking. So you think marijuana is not that big of a deal. It's, you know, low risk, but yet you've now just taken an amphetamine. So mm-hmm. There is that hazard.
Yeah, there's for sure. I mean, it's laced with, we found rat poison, opium, amphetamines, I mean, everything you can think of. You know, one thing we see in treatment and we say is, oh, the fog's finally lifting for this kid. So about after 8 to 10 weeks, the kids start, their memory starts coming back considerably, both their short-term and long-term memory. They feel better. They're just reporting about how much cognitively more aware they are. And it's for chronic marijuana users. We're frequently, you know, it used to be more of an old debate is nobody can be addicted to marijuana. It's all mental addiction is what most people argue about. And I completely disagree with it, but of course I'm biased. I run a treatment program.
Right.
But one other thing I just wanted to mention, coming back to something Jen said, and for that piece that you played a little while ago, is, you know, the things I love working with teenagers, absolutely love it. But all of us, to some degree, especially teenagers, have something in psychology we refer to as the illusion of invulnerability, which means it's not going to happen to me, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to happen to them. They might be hearing, any teenager even listening to this right now, might be saying, oh, yeah, that's my friend Chuck or my friend Sarah, not me. And the other thing they've shown, they've proved now, really within the last probably 3 to 4 years, is now the frontal lobes of teenagers or of adults aren't developed until the age of 25. And the frontal lobes are responsible for time, immediate memory, and to stop. So stop our urges, you know, our emotional urges, our drives. And so with those combinations of teenagers saying, it's not going to happen to me, and I know what's best, not as an excuse, but it's harder for me to stop myself than maybe some adults, where adults are pulling their hair out. Why don't you just listen to me and not do those things? Mm-hmm. It's difficult to work with teenagers when they have a desire to use, because, you know, everybody's saying, what can we do? What can we tell them? And really what I found the most helpful is being really firm, having love, structure, and consequences. You know, so anyway.
So you're talking about like some of the foundations of what people might consider to be good parenting all the way through age 25.
Yeah, yeah.
To the full development of the frontal lobe.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Rick Polak, you talked about this a couple different times in the program, but when we started this discussion, you mentioned prescription drugs, drugs that come from pharmacies that are found in medicine cabinets are some of the drugs that young people are abusing to the highest degree. And I think it's important for us to talk more about that, and also to offer to our listeners some resources that we will make available through our website. At kidsthesedays.org, we're going to be linking to lots of different resources, including a website that's called lockyourmeds.org, and there's really great information on this website, and there's also some wonderful advice about how to take care of yourself and your family, and also the substances that kids can get a hold of from family members, because there are statistics that say that most of the time kids are getting these from their families, and their families probably don't even know. I wanted to also mention some of the lingo that I would like to make available through our linking to this website, but also on the program today. But there are words that mean certain prescription drugs, like, for example, Vicodin is called Vikings. Oxycontin can be called cotton. Ritalin can be called kibbles and bits. Combining sedatives and coating cough syrup can be called pancakes and syrup. Valium can be called V. And over-the-counter asthma drugs can be called legal speed. And this is just scratching the surface of some of the terminology that's out there, and there's some great pamphlets that you can get from these websites as well that can help you understand some of these. What advice might any of you all have for parents if they're trying to get a handle on what to be looking for when it comes to prescription drug substance abuse?
Well, one thing the parents should do, obviously, if they're actively taking their own prescription medication, keep a handle on it. You should know how long it takes you to use it. If you start to realize that maybe the bottle's getting empty quicker than you would expect, there's something going on. So that's something to look at. If for some reason you don't have to finish that prescription, every spring, the Drug Enforcement Administration and the state troopers will go through, and they have collection points around the towns. Typically, they've been held at Fred Meyer's parking lots. There's no questions asked. Any of your prescription medications can go in there, get dropped off, and it's just a safe way of disposing them, you know, instead of dumping them down a toilet or leaving them in a medicine cabinet for somebody to get their hands on. So it's really some of it taking control of it. And then beyond that, really watching to see what the kid is doing, how they're acting. If you're being a good parent and now your child isn't reacting the way they normally do, well, you may not know it's prescription meds, but you're probably going to figure out that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm. So should parents be locking up medicines in the cabinet? Should they go over to the grandparents' house and put a lock on those medicine cabinets? I mean, is that a good solution, or is that just addressing the problem in the wrong way?
Well, I think it's one step. I mean, I think, as we've all been saying, open discussion with the kids is going to be a very beneficial step. But, you know, there's a big push of locking up your firearms because what a kid might do or another member of the family might do. You know, back when I was a kid, parents sometimes would have locks on their alcohol cabinets. It's no different. It's just another drug that is easily accessible, and it's something that has very harmful effects when, you know, many of us, probably most of us, when kids in our families are infants and toddlers, we put some type of lock on the cleaner cabinet to keep them from inducing those things. Well, now they're older. Why not put a lock on something different, being the medicine cabinet, to keep them from inducing that?
Completely agree with Rick. The only other thing I would probably add is it seems like in today's culture is most people will opt to take a medication or be willing to take a allow a medication to be prescribed, even if they might not need it. So when we talk about prevention, you know, people keep thinking about like that second or third or fourth step down the line. I would ask most people to be thinking, if you're getting your wisdom teeth out or if your kid's getting your wisdom teeth pulled out, well, maybe first see if you can try ibuprofen first. Try some other things opposed to, well, I'll get the Oxycontin and I'll just hold on to it in case. There's things like that that are much bigger preventative measures because no one wants somebody to be in pain, right, when they have a surgery or when something happens. But I would ask everyone to err on the side of caution because teenagers are curious. And that's just a fact. And that's part of the things that we love about them. But so absolutely locking them up, disposing them immediately. And as much as a parent or guardian might love their teenager and trust them, just remember they're also curious and that's not a bad thing. So yeah, always take precautions, whether it's a grandparent's house like you suggested or their house or anything.
One of the tools people in the drug and alcohol prevention world use in their world is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. It's an assessment developed by the Centers for Disease Control. The survey asks high school students to self-report on their risky behaviors in six different areas, including drug and alcohol use. The data is presented to show how many youth engaged in risky behavior. For example, in 2009, 33% of Alaska youth had at least one alcoholic drink in the month before they filled out the survey. But as Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran reports, a couple of Anchorage high school students turned the youth risk behavior survey numbers around to show how many youth are making healthy choices.
The Youth Risk Behavior Survey is administered every 2 years. Across the state, 45 schools and 2,000 students are randomly selected by the CDC to participate. About 1,400 actually do. In Alaska, parents have to actively consent for their kids to participate. About 86% give that consent. Some districts, including Anchorage, administer the survey to more kids. In 2009, more than 1,100 Anchorage high school students participated, yielding results like just under 19% of ASD students had used marijuana in the month before taking the survey. But that means that more than 80% had not. Another version of the report, The Strength of Our Youth, highlights those positive numbers instead of the negatives. It was compiled by Eagle River High School students Tanner Lyon and Ariel Slutkovsky, with Michael Karoski of the Safe and Drug-Free School Program. Slutkovsky says when Karoski asked them to do the report, they were excited.
So Tanner and I, we also are very kind of positive people, and we strongly believe that our generation is a good generation, despite adults, you know, oftentimes the media portrays, you know, kids these days, that aspect. We really felt that most of our fellow peers were making good decisions. And so this is a really cool project for us because it allowed us to see that youth are strong and the numbers prove it. That's kind of our slogan for it.
They worked on it over spring break in March 2010, starting out with a calculator at a kitchen table. They soon figured out Excel, which helped speed things up. For some of the stats, it was as simple as subtracting that 18% from 100, but some were a little trickier. The results didn't surprise Slutkovsky.
89% of us are tobacco free. And so we showed, I mean, almost 90%, almost 9 in 10 kids that you see are going to be tobacco free. And so that's the really cool thing about these numbers that we flipped, is that for kids who are kind of thinking about maybe trying something because everyone does it, the truth is not everyone does it. And so these numbers show that the majority of kids are actually making good decisions. And so that if someone wants to be cool and do what most people are doing, then perhaps they shouldn't be trying smoking or drinking or whatever else, because the numbers show that most of us are actually making good decisions.
But those numbers were hidden in an unwieldy 300-page report. In fall 2010, the group worked with a graphic designer to put it into something a little more readable for teens, an eye-popping brochure.
It's just got this stunning layout that really kind of draws the eye from fact to fact and from number to number. And so that was just really the big reason we did it, is so that it can be distributed to all students. And as a matter of fact, we printed off, I believe, 15,000 of these to give to every single high schooler in the Anchorage School District so they can see all the, you know, the big pieces of information in a simple format rather than having to dig through a 300-page report.
At Eagle River High School, the brochures were distributed through a student council with some discussion to go along with it, so it wasn't just a piece of paper to throw away. And Zlatkovsky, who just graduated from there, says they got a pretty positive response. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey was administered again this spring. The State Department of Health and Social Services should have the data out in the fall. Zlatkovsky says a student at Diamond High is interested in flipping the numbers again and issuing a follow-up Strength of Our Youth report. I'm Jessica Cochran.
Jennifer Thulin, with the Drug Demand Reduction Program with the Alaska National Guard, I've read that it focuses on increasing protective factors for young people that will help them not get involved with substance abuse. And since that story that Jessica was just talking about is looking at the positives of the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, I was hopeful that you might be able to explain a little bit more about what protective factors are and how that might help kids not get involved with substance abuse.
We incorporate activities, so learning activities, experiential education, rec ed, basically. So we'll do activities, and then at the end of the activity, we'll talk about, we'll do a reflection piece. Then we'll talk about, here, I'll just give you an example. So there's one activity we do with a ball of yarn, okay? So pretend I have a ball of yarn in my hand right now. So I throw it to you and you catch it. So there's a piece of string between you and I. Then you say something in your life that supports you. So you may say, you know, my husband or my boyfriend or something, right? And then you would toss it to Rick. And then Rick would catch it and he would say, you know, my dog, okay? So then Rick passes it to Tad and Tad says, I like to ride my motorcycle and that keeps me happy and, you know, it's something I do for fun and my daughter supports me. Sometimes she rides with me. Okay, so then we keep doing this around a big group of people, and we've created this big web. So that at the end, the aha moment or the
learning moment.
The learning moment, right, is where we say, okay, now we built this net. So if you were to fall, if you were to make a mistake, who's there to catch you? Who's part of your life that's going to help you make a better decision? Or, you know, who's your support system? So we do that. We'll take educational pieces, and then we'll tie it into the message at the end. Something fun and something that makes us all, you know, allows us all to connect and then realize that, hey, we all have very similar support networks and, you know, we're all human and these are the kind of things that we should rely on when we think about, you know, trying a drug out that our friends introduced to us or anything like that.
So those points in that web, the person who's significant to you or the activity that you do that makes you feel good, those are all together. They make the protective factors that keep people from getting that high that they maybe are looking for from a substance instead of finding it in other parts of their life.
And sometimes they don't realize that. They don't realize, wow, I do have a big support system. I didn't realize that I have so many people who care about me and we have something in common. Oh, I ride a motorcycle too and you ride a motorcycle. Or you have a dog. What kind of dog do you have? And then it helps the kids kind of connect, and human beings long to connect, right? So then they all kind of, they find other ways of recreation, mm-hmm. you know?
And speaking about connection and speaking about some of these activities that you do through your work to help young people understand how they're connected, how do you, when you're talking about prevention efforts, how do you get the kids that you're working with right there to connect with you and trust you enough to absorb these messages, to think about protective factors, to think about why they shouldn't and why they should make their own choices not to do drugs?
Okay, well, for instance, I walk into a Diamond High School health class. Do I look 26?
I can tell you, listeners, she looks very young.
Okay. So I go in there and I let them know, hey, it wasn't that long ago that I was in high school. You know, I went to West. I went to Service. You know, my brother played football for Service. So I know what's being passed around the schools. It wasn't that long ago that I was here in high school with you. And so I'll just tell them my experiences and then I'll let them share their experiences. Then we make that connection. You know, or they'll say, oh, cool hair, Sergeant Thulin. You know, and then you just, they just kind of connect with us because we're youthful, we're fun, and we create a safe environment for them to share. You know, tell us what's being passed around Diamond High School. Painkillers. Okay, then we'll start talking about painkillers. And then my friend, you know, they do that kind of thing. And we don't, you know, we're not cops. We're just here to talk to you and educate you. Before you take a pill, know exactly what it is that you're putting into your body.
Can I follow up
with
that, too?
Absolutely. Tad Sumner.
That's great, Jen, because we do the exact same thing in treatment. The first thing we're doing is trying to create an environment where the kid feels safe and they can be open. So, you know, on the earlier segment where one of the teenagers was talking there, they said, your parents say, don't do drugs, listen to them, and stay in school. And so we'll even joke, like, all right, you're here in treatment. Don't do drugs, stay in school, and listen to your parents, you know? Okay, you can go home, you know? So we really try to get them to understand that they can open up and talk about why they like substances, what is going on in their lives, that we're not there to judge them or tell them that they're bad people for what they've done. And then for them to really start opening up, and then they can start seeing the consequences versus initially they're so defensive because they're used to people saying, don't do drugs, don't do drugs, don't do drugs. And then they can really start seeing the consequences and their thought processes that what led them to continue to use. So I think that's a big piece is about, it's all about the relationship. So that's a great question. And it's great that you do that too, Jen. That's awesome.
And I also like to call that high school generation, I like to call it Generation Y, because you tell them, don't do drugs. Don't take Vicodin. Okay, why? You know, so, and I think a lot of them are afraid to ask why, so they'll just think why, you know, so I just like to.
So it's Generation WHY, mm-hmm. Right?
Generation Y, WHY.
Well, regretfully, that's all the time that we have today to talk about this topic, and I just want to thank each of you for being here and for your expertise. We had with us today Inspector Rick Pollack. He's a narcotics investigator with the Alaska State Troopers. Also, Tech Sergeant Jennifer Thulin with the Alaska National Guard, and Tad Sumner, who is here today from Volunteers of America and their ARCH program. Thanks to each of you for being here. It's truly been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And as I mentioned, we will be linking to many of the resources that we talked about on today's program, many of the studies. Sarah Gonzalez, our web producer, does an excellent job of compiling all the information mentioned on the program, and you can find that all through one quick stop by going to www.kidsthesedays.org. Kids These Days is a production of the Content Producers Guild, made possible with support from partner station KSKA-FM Anchorage. Our funding comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Next time on Kids These Days, there's a matchup, free-range parenting versus over-parenting. Where do you stand? Which one will prevail? Well, we likely won't find that out next time, but we will explore the range of parenting philosophies from hands-off approaches to helicoptering. You don't want to miss that conversation or the new Power of One planned for that hour. Plus, grown-ups remember whether they themselves were free-range when they were kids. All that next time. Kids These Days had help today from our regular contributor, Jessica Cochran. Rosie Robards assisted Aviva Hirsch from the teen-filled offices of the Alaska Teen Media Institute. Sarah Gonzalez contributed to our broadcast hour today and ran the controls. She's the person who keeps the kidsthesedays.org website informative, fresh, and fun-filled for you every day of the week. Check out this program or archived episodes there. Sign up for our podcast, too, and follow us through social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Shanna Sheehy, your host. Thanks for being with me today, and we'll see you next time.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.